In Metro Vancouver, we'll be thinking, I had to put my tomatoes in the ground, my peppers, this eggplant, the zucchinis, all my seedlings that I've been growing all over this time, or I have purchased in the garden center, goes into the garden. And
if you haven't been growing seedlings, you're going to want to get those shoots or small plants and get them in the ground too.
Yes, if you haven't started your seeds, you will go to the garden center and get your starts or seedlings and that's the way you start your garden. Yeah. So don't miss this weekend. The garden centers will be full and everybody will be busy in the garden. Unfortunately, the weather looks like it's going to be cold. This week is quite surprising, the temperature drop. Mm-hmm. Today we are around 10 degrees, very, very cold for the season.
Great. So what are the plants we're putting in? What are the main ones we're looking at right now?
So at the moment, as we mentioned before, summer is the season where we grow vegetables that gives us fruits, mm-hmm. fruit vegetables. So tomatoes, peppers, chili peppers, zucchinis, corn, needs to be in the ground. And we could start a second crop of potatoes. Okay. So they will be all the way until September. So it's a long time because the early potatoes we planted early in the season in April. So mm-hmm. at the moment, we are just looking forward to see those potatoes, how they are doing. So potatoes will be for the main crop. And corn. Corn should be planted in blocks.
Yeah.
In our case, we plant a full 4x4 feet garden bed, only mm-hmm. corn. The fact is that corn pollinates by wind.
Yeah.
And so the wind shakes the corn stalks and the pollen falls from the and fertilizes the silks.
Right.
And which the corn is. And so
you really need that sort of cluster to make sure that pollen, when it comes off the plant, is falling on another one.
Falling on the one, that's right. Yeah. So if you just make very few rows, no, the pollen will just flow away, and then we are quite disappointed that mm-hmm. there is no corn.
Right.
Yeah. And then we need to look after our garden as well, keeping watering, looking after weeds, keeping it clean of weeds. Keep an eye on pests, as we've been talking last week. Keep an eye on control all your slugs. Keep an eye on the aphids that will start showing up.
Yep.
Yeah. And for our summer crops, as we've been talking, water the soil, not the plants. Water the soil, not the leaves. Yeah. Here in Bark, all our garden beds are covered with hoop houses. Mm-hmm. So by Victoria Day, we remove all the covers, the plastic covers from our hoop houses. So
you've been protecting them from too much rain up till now?
Too much rain and too cold. Although the last 2 weeks we had an awesome weather, very summer-like, but this week is kind of Mother Nature is reminding us we are still not off from the spring. So, after the Victoria Day, we will just remove all the plastic covers.
So from now on, we can expect things to be warm enough.
Warm enough from now on, yes. And when we thought that we are not going to do any seeding indoors, is this now the time to start our plants, our seeding for the fall crops, for mm-hmm. the fall. So we are not starting spring yet. I'm sorry, summer yet.
Yep.
We are already thinking in fall.
Mm-hmm.
So we are always a season ahead. So this is the time that we start thinking, what would like to grow in the fall? Cauliflowers, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. So this is now the time to start thinking, okay, what are the seeds that I have, the soil, and can I start my indoor seeding again for the fall?
Great. And what are the ones you're going to be doing there?
Mainly broccoli, cauliflower, and kale. That's our favorites in here.
Okay. So if people have been sort of really thinking about their garden and considering what they're going to do, but they haven't jumped on it yet, now's the time to get going.
Correct. Yeah. And I'm advised, use seedlings, no seeds.
Yeah.
If you like tomatoes, use seedlings. Yeah. If we plant by start by seeds at the moment, it will take too long. By the time that the plant is flowering and fruiting, we were talking about September,
right,
when the weather starts to cool off, and yeah, it's too late.
And those are available in the garden stores, and not too expensive. So yeah, you can definitely jump on this and get your garden going. And of course, if you have been on the plan all along,
that's right,
you can take your seedlings that you've been cultivating,
and
get them going. And now that the seedlings are coming out that you're going to put in the ground,
mm-hmm,
now you have space to start your next group of seedlings for your fall crops.
Correct. So we are emptying one space, moving to outside to the outdoor gardens, and the grow lights will continue growing for the fall. Yes.
So now that people are working on that, what are they looking forward to the next few weeks? I know there's another big week coming up at the end of June too.
Yeah. So the end of June is week 26.
Yeah.
That's our big week because it's the week where elementary and secondary schools end the school year, and for us, if we haven't started our seeds indoors, it's the time to start our nursery outdoors.
Right.
So it's another big event, like, oh, week 26, we should start my outdoors nursery for my seedlings for these four crops. Yeah. So we are very excited. It's this next 6 weeks is really, really planting, maintaining the garden, and over the summer, yeah, don't forget to keep feeding your plants with fertilizer, either organic fertilizer or the fertilizer that you create yourself, you make yourself, using different products, and yeah, keep those plants happy.
And then a lot of the plants we've had in the ground for a number of weeks, the leafy greens and stuff, they should be producing by now.
At the moment, our broccolis are just showing up.
Yeah.
They are tempting to harvest. Still, the head is small, but it's really showing. The cauliflower starts showing as well, the head. Kale, we are just harvesting. Kale is ready. Lettuces, leaf lettuces are coming too. Radishes we planted, yeah, we're harvesting those too. So most of this spring crops, cold crops are coming and making room for the summer crops.
Excellent. Well, sounds like a very busy time. Everyone, you got to get out in the garden and get your stuff rolling.
Yes. Don't forget, if it gets hot, keep hydrated. use a hat, something to protect your head from the... keep happy being outdoors.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability, the gardens manager for Embark. And their gardens programs. How do people find out more about Embark and some of your programs?
Embark Sustainability has his website at embarksustainability.org, or follow us in our social channels at hashtag Embark Sustainability. The coming week, we start our food rescue table, mm-hmm, here in campus, food distribution.
Okay.
So next week, if you're interested in having free food, mm-hmm, edible free food, visit us in the subway hall every Thursdays between 1 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
And this will include some of the produce from your garden?
Absolutely. So today we will be harvesting and distributing our produce here in the Student Union building.
Excellent. Well, look out for that. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week, Pablo.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Do you know what your local wetland has done for you lately? Wetlands function like nature's kidneys, mitigating the impacts of floods and droughts, protecting our communities, and supporting food production. Despite representing 6% of the Earth's surface, wetlands store 33% of the planet's carbon. If you value life, thank a wetland. Learn about wetlands at work with Ducks Unlimited Canada at ducks.ca/wetlands.
And now we have an interview with SFU student Artin Safai, who is a member of students, staff, and faculty for a Democratic Society, which is also known as the Students for a Democratic University, the SDU. He's a member of SFU's political science department, and among the group advocates for a lot of things on campus, but also, including a more democratic university, of course, it's right in their name, but also some of the associations that the campus, the university, and its departments make, and in particular the political science department, the very deep involvement or heavy involvement and therefore influence of NATO in the political science department here at SFU. This interview is with Peter R.H. and SFU student Artin Safi.
Okay, I'm here with... Because it's very interesting you're saying that NATO involvement with the political science here at SFU.
Yeah.
And just say a bit about who you are, your relationship with SFU, and tell what the problem is. With this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my name is Artin. I work here with SDU Plus, which is student, staff, and faculty for a democratic university. We work, we're an affiliated action group with SFPIRG. And what I focus on, we have a committee which is focused on the NATO Field School. I'm a political science major myself, and what we have really is our political science department is a stagnating department. It gets funding, but it doesn't produce a lot of work that kind of makes it important and prestigious in the academic circles. A lot of people haven't heard of our political science department, for example. When they think about SFU, they don't think about political science. There are other departments that maybe get the spotlight. And I think we think one of the reasons for that is the NATO Field School. It's kind of this outside program that takes a lot of space and a lot of organizing effort in the political science department. It's really kind of a program that is, first of all, not inclusive. It is only NATO passport-holding students that can attend, which is a specific number of countries who are affiliated with NATO, and if you have their the citizenship or their passport, you can join. For example, myself as an Iranian who's not maybe Canadian or a NATO member passport holder, I can't attend this program. And there are reasons for that. There are security reasons for that. But unfortunately, it just for something that the political science department focuses on so heavily, I think it's not good. There's also a very ideological issue with it, is that NATO, a lot of people want to think about NATO as, which is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It's kind of a defense treaty between a lot of Western countries headed by the United States. A lot of people think about it as a defense treaty and a defense organization, and maybe that was so previously, but today it serves many purposes, and none of them is defense. NATO's sort of a military arm of a lot of Western governments, like the United States. For example, NATO went into Libya for the Americans, and if you search up Libya today, it's a failed state. It's a country that suffered heavily from NATO intervention. But that's beside the point. What we feel like has happened with the coming of this program into the political science department, it has taken a lot of space and a lot of energy and effort and faculty members to organize and focus on this program, which is kind of an educational or a boot camp for NATO bureaucracy. It produces an environment in which our students are kind of being developed or educated to become members of bureaucracy in these institutions that promote, anti-human rights or anti-social justice policies. They have a track record of warmongering and creating divisions. We have a issue with the university here investing in Israeli and military industrial complex corporations that sell or help aid in the genocide in Palestine, for example. And we see the kind of educational arm of it in these kinds of programs. When you have a university that is actively funding and is focusing on a program so heavily based on this ideology of imperialism and NATO, it's obvious that your political science department does not become diverse. It does not focus on other things. As a political science student, I'm disgruntled. My department is weak. It's stagnant. In a lot of our courses, there's a lack of energy and vibrance. And I think one of the reasons is because of this field school kind of program.
Well, what I do know, over at UBC, what the Lew Institute for Global Issues is partially funded by Canada's Department of Defense.
Wow.
And when I did an article, I guess it'd be 2008, because I had a run-in with UBC security trying to find information about it. And finally, it wasn't in the actual UBC, but it was a publication they had then called The Knoll. I finally got the thing in it. And then it had to be this fine point that it had to say specifically the Canadian Department of Defense is partially funding it.
Exactly. It just goes to show the depth of the military-industrial complex, the money that comes from these industries in our academic circles. Like SFU invests heavily in many military or arms corporations for its profit. There is an active BDS movement going on that also considers both SFU and UBC. It just goes to show we have a university that doesn't care about what the students think about these issues, and it's pushing a sort of agenda that promotes this kind of imperialism, or maybe normalization of it. You know, it is not normal for the Department of Security or NATO to be funding a program in an academic space, in my opinion. I think there we should focus our research on political science policies and issues and data analysis that benefits our political environment in Canada in a way that creates more democracy, in a way that creates a more vibrant, healthy political environment. This, in my opinion, this kind of program is anti-democratic by nature because it is a certain circle of students that can attend, and the people who run it run it very secretively. There's not a lot of information about the NATO Field School. When we ask for it, we don't get a lot because it's kind of organized as an outside program. Therefore, even though it takes a lot of money, it takes a lot of focus and energy in the department, it's kind of run by specific profs. A couple of professors and faculty members run this program like a tight ship. And it's just, it's sad to see. It's sad to see that our department is so maybe weighted towards a specific group with a specific ideology. The education kind of platform of this program is very ideological, even though they try to hide it. For example, a student, a friend of mine that went on this program, was talking about how they had to attend a religious ceremony in a way if they were on the program. No matter what their religious beliefs were, they had to attend this. And, well, there's a reason for that, because the main professor who organizes this field school program has a very deep religious bent, is anti-abortion, has a lot of Christian values that maybe for a lot of us seem radical and are not supposed to be in an academic space in the way that they are. So I think these are very important things that we need to consider. And I think political science students and staff have to talk about this more than they are already.
What I find interesting is that this seems a bit worse than the Lew Institute for Global Issues.
It absolutely is. I think it absolutely is. It takes away so much of our department. And it is because it gives so much prestige to the department in, from the outside world in these circles of high kind of investment and high finance and kind of state-run programs, because it gives them this prestige, they become stagnant. They don't want to pursue more research. They don't want to work on different aspects of political science work. And they focus so much. A student upstairs where we were was talking to us about how they had to they were focusing on hiring professors and staff for the NATO Field School program rather than, for example, Indigenous political studies or other different aspects of political science research. So I think I agree with you. It's absolutely worse.
Well, one thing in 2008, I'll briefly say what happened to me. I was at UBC as a non-student, but I knew about this Lew Institute, and I said, I want to get to the bottom of it. So I went in there one day and just, once you wound up just to be a secretary or something, can you tell me what specifically this is? And she got kind of flustered and called security on me, and I just left the building. And I left It was half a block where they now have the journalism school or the Frederick. Mm-hmm. And they had security there. And I said, well, I left the building. Mm-hmm. I've done what you really want. And they wanted my ID. So I'm not going to show you my ID. Mm-hmm. So the RCMP came, which is like in Burnaby. It's RCMP, and it was also on UBC. I just went for 5 minutes. Do I legally have to show you my ID? They didn't answer it. I'll give you a deal. I'll show it to you. Mm-hmm. But I made a complaint about it. Mm-hmm. And then I couldn't get UBC or CRTR interested, but there was the Noel paper. And they did an article on it. Mm-hmm. And then I did a bit more deeper on it. And the Canada's Department of Defense partially funds the Lew Institute. Also, a bit after the incident, I went to this thing with the Lew Institute. They brought a guy in from the World Bank and the IMF saying how great that was. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then I said, well, he didn't mention Robert McNamara. Mm-hmm. After he was the architect of the Vietnam War, he was president of the World Bank from 1968, 1981, mm-hmm. got the whole third world in debt,
yep.
which they're still paying for.
Yep.
You're making it sound good, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And also, he started the deforestation of the Brazilian Amazon yeah. rainforest, because the last thing he did, 1981, was to slash it for mm-hmm. for cattle for McDonald's.
Yeah, deregulated for burgers. Yeah,
and then they say, now we're concerned with climate change. Now we're
absolutely.
Concerned about deforestation.
Absolutely.
And then they'll do their little thing yeah. like, we were never part of that.
Yeah. And then, wash it off. I think it goes to, on your point, it goes to a deeper issue of, again, our institutions of education becoming institutions of propaganda for a lot of these kind of policies that maybe people... they need people to stop talking about or talk about in a different lens. Like, there is no reason for the IMF to be having educationals in an educational institution. And the only reason that there is because they're funded to be there, you know, or they're allowed to be there. It's the same with NATO. The political science department of a university, a public university at that, should be critical of international institutions, not in a way of spreading hate of it or being or whining about it, you guys are bad, but to sit down and analyze their work and give academic criticism to these institutions independently. The whole point of a political science department is independent political science research. But instead of that, what we're doing is we're creating close ties with these institutions that are anti-democratic, anti-student, anti-academia, and allowing them to co-opt our spaces and take over our facilities and energy and capital that could be going into good research. It creates an anti-democratic kind of environment in our political science department that I see today. As a student, I look around, I go to my class, I sit down, I absorb a class kind of syllabus or class material that has been written by a professor 20 years ago and is just reproduced every year because they don't need to do anything. Stagnation in political science department is visible because they have this outside of the department program that is making them money, that is giving them the prestige they want, and they don't care if the student at the end of the day doesn't learn anything. Do you know that NATO is actually a defense thing and it's really good for you, and hey, maybe you can get a job in NATO or in the Canadian government if you do our programs?
Well, I like to just... this seems a bit worse than the Lew Institute, because the thing is about the Lew Institute, it's partially funded by
But they're all connected.
I know that. But this seems NATO, which is sort of... which is only Canada's part of. Now, you've made a past statement that it's kind of true that it's led by the United States, but... the rhetoric is that they're but one of the countries.
Yes, of course. Of course, that's their rhetoric. And that's what you will learn when you go to the field school. But if you know the political, the geopolitical environment of the world today, or even the history of NATO, you will see that it was established by the Americans with the collaboration and kind of buying off of their Western allies. We will pay you. We will redevelop you after the war. Just come and sign this off. And why? To defend against the Soviet Union and the spread of communist and anti-capitalist thinking around the world. And, well, that was obviously a threat to Western governments then, not now. Today, NATO doesn't serve any sort of purpose of defending Western values.
Yes, I would agree. And the other thing is that now the United States doesn't want to, for the Ukrainians, they don't really want to be helping them out.
That's a whole big thing.
But I know. But the other thing is that they may not even be involved with NATO anymore, and they want to take over Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of interesting, but it's still, I would say, what you're saying is right. The United States is still leading us. That's why they want us to spend 2% of our GNP on the military.
Exactly.
That goes to American companies,
exactly.
No doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Who is building and selling these arms? It's American companies. It's Israeli intelligence corporations that get the bank of the Canadian taxpayer. And then we have our university having a program to tell its students everything is okay. This is actually a good thing for you. You like this, and you should come work with us. And
so
I think that's bad.
Why don't we just have a few last words to wind up this segment from you and how you would like to bring up what this issue is, a good wind-up.
Absolutely. Well, I work with SDU. As I said, students, faculty, and staff for Democratic University. We had our assembly just now upstairs. You were there with me. And what we have in SDU is a committee specifically focused on the NATO Field School and also on international solidarity in university generally. I think there isn't a real divide between the genocide in Palestine that Israel is committing and the way the University of SFU is, the Simon Fraser University is investing and directly has financial ties to these military-industrial complex kind of beneficiaries. I think there is not a big difference between that and the NATO Field School. It people that go, and I had friends that went on the Field School, and they say that they talk about this and they push it aside or they give their own narrative. So I think for us, the most important thing right now is to raise awareness and give more educational material and transparency to the student body about this issue. The committee's work right now is mostly focusing on educationals and talking to students and seeing where they're at about this. Do they even know what the NATO Field School is? Do they even know what it does? Who runs it? And who pays for it? And if people are interested, they can drop by at SF Perg. SF Perg is right here next to next to Embark. It's in the sub-building.
We're across from Embark, so we're on the basement here at the Student Union Building.
Exactly.
CJSF. And
yeah.
So PERG, is it called?
SF PERG, yeah. It's the one at the end of the hall here, and if people go in there, they can also search SDU, SFU on Instagram, and if people are interested, everyone's welcome to come organize with us, join us. I think this is an issue that is more important than it might seem when you first take a look at it, but it's not just for political science students. I feel like there is a deep issue of where funding for academia comes from, and who controls that funding, and who makes the decisions. And the reality is, we're not on that table.
Okay, for now, we'll leave it at that. But I hope you feel I've let you say your piece without too
Absolutely.
Many interruptions from me.
No, I think this was great. Thank you so much.
Anyway, so back to the rest of the show.
That was SFU student Artin Safai, member of Students, Staff, and Faculty for Democratic Society, also known as the Students for a Democratic University, or the SDU. That interview was with Peter R.H., my regular colleague. Don't forget that coming up shortly is Democracy Now! Up at 11 a.m. as it is every weekday here at CJSF. We'll also have Wandering Rhythms coming up at noon. And new programmer and host Leo is on in the open mic slot at 2 o'clock. You should really stick around for his show. He's got some great music selections that you're going to enjoy, and he's going to be He's going to be there for a few more weeks before he puts in a proposal for his own show. And we're looking forward to that. Typically Tuesdays is up at 3 o'clock. And so much more great programming coming up here on CJSF throughout the day. Canada Land at 5 p.m. The Metal Meltdown at 8 p.m. Vancouver, Espana at 6. All coming up here on CJSF 90.1 FM.